right, hello everyone, and welcome to Criterion Deep Dives. This is Mike here, and here with me today I have my good friend Mimi. Hello, Mimi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's a nice Saturday morning. It's chilly in Columbus again. It was 80 all week, so a bit confused.
Yes, for sure. It's been very rainy weather here in Chicago, perfect for putting a scary movie on and setting your mind at ease. So
it's true. When I did watch this, it was pouring down rain. So
that's kind of interesting because the movie it's not a gloomy movie, right? So it's a bit of a contrast. But yes. Yeah, so as the listeners of this podcast know, we've been trying to focus in on some scary movies for Halloween. I would say that our selection so far hasn't been like super Halloween-y, but we've gone with something resembling the horror genre. So, actually on Criterion channel right now, there's a collection of, it's just called 70s horror. And I think there's about 20 to 30 films on there. Several of which we're, covering here on the podcast, but I've really been enjoying watching those and the aesthetic of that day and age, and especially with, I think, what are a lot of, like, what, you know, horror being a lower budget genre at the time, which is definitely not the case today anymore. If anything, like, the way movies are today, horror movies are more of a surefire bet commercially. I think outside of COVID and the struggles that movie theaters were having already, like, horror movies are still a draw that could bring people to a movie theater, and you could have like a successful horror movie play and bring people in, so rather than just streaming. So but yeah, so, you know, if you're watching the Criterion channel, I would say check out those 70s horror movies. Maybe we'll still cover a couple more on the pod. And one of them is the one that Mimi chose here on the podcast. So, Mimi, do you want to tell us a little bit about your selection, your looking through the films and landing on something to watch?
Yeah, so I was listening to your podcast, of course, before we agreed to have me on. And I was kind of just looking at the Criterion selection. And I put in the genre horror and thriller, not knowing that it would narrow it down to movies that had both of those tags on it.
Oh, right.
And so yeah. It pulled five up and I was like, oh, this is kind of a crappy selection. But out of those five, so it narrowed it down right away.
Yeah.
And I looked at Long Weekend because the picture on the website is of a really kind of fancy campsite. And I had just gone camping the weekend before. I was looking at it. I was like, ooh, I kind of want to get spooked, so I won't go camping the rest of the year. So I clicked on it and read about it, and it ended up being like kind of like an ecological thriller, which is what I studied in school and what I was interested in. It's described as this, you know, angry couple that hates each other goes camping to try to rekindle their relationship. Yeah, exactly. And animals fight back. And I was like, this sounds amazing. And
yeah,
then you sent me the longer list of stuff just under the horror category. And that one still appealed to me the most. Yeah, I did want something kind of that was animal related. Because the last kind of horror movie thriller I watched, I went and saw Us in theaters.
Mm.
And then before that, it was Hereditary. I still am scarred. I still, like, wake up and, like, look at the corner of my room to see if someone that's possessed is,
yeah,
up there.
Yeah, what's the staying image from Hereditary with you? Like, because I know I have one.
Oh. Yeah, it's kind of towards the end. Well, of course, the decapitation. Like, that's scarring,
yes, yes,
in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just up in the end, like, towards the end when the mom is in the rafters of the house,
oh,
and her head just kind of like,
yeah,
turns sideways. Yeah,
Toni Collette, so the mom, like the mom that we're following throughout the I am your mother mom.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Because for me, the thing that always freaks me out the most from that movie, or I always think about, is early in the movie, shortly after Toni Collette's mother has died and they've gone to the funeral, and she sees her ever so faintly just in the corner of the room, like she's barely visible, and she's like, "Mom?" And then she disappears, and which is like kind of a classic horror movie thing, but I think like, and this is something that these like The Haunting of Hill House and Bly Manor, these shows that Netflix has done the past like two Halloweens, I think does really well, is that there's just like this stuff in the periphery hiding out that is kind of like that show Bly Manor for me is like watching like doing like a Where's Waldo, because like I'm not even like paying attention to the dialogue, I'm just like, where are the ghosts in the background? Like,
I haven't watched Bly Manor yet. I did watch Hill House, and before I started watching Hill House, I did see some stuff, I think on BuzzFeed, that they had an enormous amount of ghosts just in the background, like not even relevant to the story necessarily. And so yeah. I remember watching that show and kind of like trying to pick those out.
It's super cool. Like sometimes they're like the camera's not treating them as important at all, but they're kind of in plain sight. So, but yeah, that moment from Hereditary always freaks me out. I think because like the experience of being in a dark room, like going to bed and like thinking you see something, or just like, wait, what is that shadow? Like, it's like barely visible, and it kind of like keeps you up a little bit because you're like, wait, am I safe? Like, what is that? So
yeah, exactly.
Those are the things that freak me out. Like, and it's funny because there's obviously such like horrible, gruesome things in Hereditary, but that's the thing that always stays with me.
I know. Yeah. I listened to your episode with Logan, and you guys kind of talked about whether you believe in ghosts or aliens more. And I'm definitely more of a ghost believer versus alien. So sometimes I do freak myself out. Yeah.
I think I've changed my take on that since I said that, but I think the point still stands, right? Of convincing yourself that ghosts are real. It's not that difficult. So no, anyways, this movie that you chose has very little to do with ghosts or darkness or anything.
I know.
It's an Australian film, and yes, as you stated, it follows a couple and their camping trip and their battle against nature, right? And this is one of these, like, I remember from English class, like, the four conflicts of like of storytelling or whatever, and I don't know if I'm gonna remember them, but it's like man versus man, right? Okay. Man versus government, I believe, or like yes. Organizations, man versus self, and then man versus nature. Yeah. And the typical like man versus nature, like you can think of stories like Moby Dick or anything with like a natural disaster, like The Perfect Storm, movies like that. Of course, this movie's dealing specifically, I think, with a lot of like Australian fauna, and they are known for their weird, wacky animals down there.
Yeah, they just have like an enormous amount too, in general, of just venomous and poisonous species, a lot of invasive stuff. I mean, they have all sorts of fauna. As you said, during the movie, we're mostly we're not in the outback because it's not desert, but more, I think it was like supposed to be Queensland, where it was a lot of beaches and a lot of like overgrown trees, so more tropical. So I think that's why Australia has so much of that stuff, because they're tropical, they're rainforest, they're desert, they kind of cover everything.
Yeah, and for sure. And I think actually I mentioned this book to you, but earlier in the year I read this book called The World Without Us that basically imagined what would happen to the world if all humans disappeared tomorrow, which was a weird read because one of the things they were talking about was like a sudden pandemic. And I was like, ooh, yikes. But it talked a lot about, it was talking about like different extinction periods and whatnot and fossils and megafauna that used to exist in like North America and all over. Like apparently there used to be like elephants in North America, like in Arizona or something like that. I could be totally wrong, but I think that there was just some wild stuff like that no longer exists in, you know, in the places that these animals used to be. But apparently with Australia, like due to the fact that it was like an island and humans were later to like sort of really establish a presence there. The fossils of megafauna are a little bit like fresher in Australia, I think. So it's like there are different species that are the really large animals that they may have like better retained fossils from, as well as some animals that are still just like basically their own hybrid, their own like species or whatever, totally unique to like stuff outside of the rest of the world. So it's really interesting, and I love like that focus of this movie. But yeah, so they go on a camping trip. One thing I wanted to say like right away that I was thinking of is like this is posited as like a marriage saving weekend or trip or whatever. Like that's the purpose of it. If you're trying to save your marriage or your relationship, like camping is like the number one worst thing you can do, I feel like.
Especially because one of the main plot lines is she hates camping and she didn't want to be there. The wife, she was like, she at the beginning,
she's like, you know, I'm not an outdoors person.
Yeah, she's like, you spent $2,000 on all this equipment, and I just wanted to go on a weekend with my friends, and now we have to go to this stupid camping trip.
I think I kind of spaced out or was a little confused about that, because I remember her talking about, I remember when they're first in the car, and they're kind of talking about her friends or whatever, or maybe another couple or something like that, that they were, like, gonna meet up with, and it was very temporary, but for a second I was like, did they have like a big like open relationship with this other couple? Because I thought they were they were like messing around with this idea of like, oh, we're supposed to be with them, but like we're trying to like be ourselves. But I think that was totally off base. Like, did you understand what was happening there? Like she was initially supposed to hang out with their friends basically.
Yeah, I think so. So throughout the course of the movie, I kind of gathered they both maybe cheated or wanted to cheat with the other couple, the opposite sex of the other couple, and they were both kind of trying to do that. So it was kind of like an open relationship, but it wasn't okayed by either couple kind of thing.
Right. It was an accidental open relationship.
Yeah, so I think they both, the guy in the movie says, like, we need some time away from them. And I don't think the wife necessarily wanted to do that, so they were trying to maybe get away.
Yeah, it appears that like later on in the movie it's mentioned that she had an affair with the neighbor, so maybe it's like maybe they're neighbors or whatever. But and then I felt like I thought that because the first shot of the movie is a crab at the beach where they're gonna be, just kind of like a little set piece for the opening titles, which was fun. But then the next thing we see is the husband, Peter, I believe his name is, like leaving his office in whatever city they live in. And it's kind of like, and this is this thing that I love about 70s films is that they were just like really obsessed with the telephoto lens back then. So it's like kind of like zooming in really far. And there's a lot of shots like these. I think there was like this weird like surveillance paranoia thing going on with like the filmmakers too, because that was a big topic at the time in the 70s, was obviously with like Nixon and Watergate. And then there's this movie, The Conversation with Gene Hackman, where he witnesses a murder and then he's convinced that he's being like wiretapped and everything. But like, it does feel like this
fascinating take on it. Yeah.
There were a lot of movies in the 70s, I think, that dealt with this sort of like watching from afar and following. And I think that some of the telephoto stuff had to do with that. But of course, it doesn't have a ton to do with this movie. It was just something I noticed was like, they started off and I was like, yep, that's a signature 70s look right there. They got the telephoto shot.
And it slowly, zooms in on Peter carrying this package, hopping in his convertible.
Yeah.
And lighting up a cigarette, which also was very 70s.
Well, and he also hugs someone and is kind of talking with this other woman. So I was like, oh, is this maybe like a mistress at his office? Because I felt like that was indicated too. It was just, you know, not a good relationship whatsoever. So anyways, we're seeing him leaving the office, coming home, and then his wife, Marsha, whatever. She's at home on the phone, and one thing that happens a couple times in this film is we get, like, the TV's on or the radio's on, and you're hearing stuff that's happening in the world.
Did you hear what was going on the TV behind her?
Yeah, it's a little on the nose, right? It's like, white cockatoos were attacking houses for no apparent reason. Like, so, you know, we're already getting a sense of like what this movie's gonna be about basically. But I know that, like, I do know that this is, once again, going back to the Australian fauna, it's like, I know that this is like a thing in Australia, right? Like, especially with birds. Like, I was trying to remember, I looked it up, it's called the cassowary. It's like this huge crazy Australian bird that is will just like attack people. I feel like Australians like really have to look out for these crazy big birds that are like just kind of a danger to them. So
I can't even imagine, especially they have huge talons driving along and you have something come and swarm at your head. I think that's like everyone's fear of birds to begin with.
For sure. And that's another movie too, right? The Birds, the Hitchcock's The Birds. Yeah. That is kind of in this same genre of like man versus animal. You know, another thing we get is he throws a cigarette into the bush. It starts lighting a little fire, which of course is incredibly relevant for Australia with the wildfires that they've had to deal with. I think that was
exactly
this past winter, right? About a year
ago.
And
you also see, And you also see him crumbling up his receipt and just kind of throwing it in. And of course he's driving a convertible. So that's going to, of course, fly right out and continue with the litter theme of the movie as well.
Right. For sure. So yeah, he's like, he switches out cars into the little camper. I love this car he has.
I'm obsessed with the car. I wish I had one.
Yeah, it's like a, what do you even call it? It's like,
it's kind of like a Jeep, but like an Outback Jeep where you kind of just cruise around. It doesn't really have an inside, but it's like this Jeep body thing. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's got like a, it's a great sort of like 70s, like bright burnt orange color. So they hop in that for their camping weekend, her very reluctantly. But she's trying, right?
And like, did you, at the, also, she, the, Peter has this dog named Cricket, which he names after nature, which I think is also kind of hypocritical once you see how he treats everything. And she was like, no, we're not taking Cricket. I gave her 3 days worth of dog food.
Yeah.
And so she'll be fine while we're gone. And he's like, you're an idiot. No, we're taking her with us.
Yeah, they're both kind of idiots. Like in some ways she seems genuinely more like ignorant. Like she seems more just unaware of like environmental issues, whereas Peter seems more just like he doesn't care. Like he kind of seems like some of that stuff he knows, but he doesn't care. He's just like, whatever, I'm going to like blaze my path of destruction. But yeah, so they're trying to find this beach to camp at called Munda Beach, and of course like it's raining and it's dark and they're like, they've just set out on this trip. It's like this, you know, experience of like, oh my gosh, what are we doing? Like, why do we not just stay at home?
Fun fact about the film though, sorry to interrupt, is all of it was shot on scene, except like the driving parts of it. Those were in a garage. And so, of course, they had, like, the crew people with, like, flashlights and trying to make it look rainy. But the amazing thing that I just thought of about the whole movie is all of it shot outside. And they said the weather was so cooperative for the whole movie. And in all of the really, like, kind of spooky scenes, the weather would just, like, turn spooky for them.
Mm, interesting. Like getting the natural rain for certain raining scenes and whatnot.
Exactly. Or if it would, you know, some of the haunting of the animals, it would just get like kind of murky and scary in the background.
That's always the risk you take when you try to film something that way, I think. But this also seemed like kind of very low budget film. I read that the screenwriter like wrote this script really quickly in like 10 days and was just like showed it to the director. And he's like, cool, let's go film this. And they filmed it over the course of like just about a month and a half, I think.
That kind of makes sense though, because there's so little dialogue in this movie also.
There's moments where there's a decent amount, and I actually liked the dialogue when it did happen, but I would say like to its detriment. Like there's moments where there's just not enough happening.
Yeah, exactly. They're kind of just like palling around at the campsite. But yeah, so they're driving in the rain. He ends up hitting a kangaroo while his wife's asleep.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering. I was like, is this like a common thing like in America with deer crossing? Like, are there kangaroo crossing signs? Like in Australia, I'm sure it's all over the place. Like,
yeah, they do have those kangaroo crossing signs, and that is a common thing for people to hit. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of just like our deer.
Yeah, for sure. Running into a deer is kind of like a classic sort of, it happens in a lot of movies. I'm only thinking of two, but of course, like, one notable example is Get Out as a horror movie, mm-hmm. where they hit the deer at the beginning of the movie on the way to the house.
They have the police officer come, and he's kind of just a little bit sketchy with them.
Yes, yes. And then another movie that I love is called A Most Violent Year with Oscar Isaac. And I remember he runs over a deer and he shoots it to put it out of its misery, basically. I think there's like a dramatic sort of gravitas to this sort of scene of like hitting an animal with your car. And then there's like this confrontation or whatever. So he runs into a kangaroo. He has to stop for directions because he's having trouble finding this beach, which once again, just like makes me think of, I don't know how anyone like ever took a vacation or trip without Google. Like,
I thought about that too. Like, they're kind of just driving around in circles to figure out where the beach is once they get directions. He says, you know, it's 5 miles down the road, and then it seems like they're driving for another 3 hours around all these trees. And yeah, I definitely thought the same thing. Like, how did anyone get anywhere? Like, how do you get to your friend's house? How do you go on vacation?
How do you know the quickest route about town?
Exactly. How do you know if there's traffic while it's happening?
I know, right? I think I was talking to my mom about this, and she was like, yeah, we just used to, you know, you just call the travel agency and they would plan it for you. I'm like,
yeah, my mom used to get her AAA trip ticks or whatever they called them.
I'm like, it does sound kind of nice. Just be like, hello, yes, I would like to go to Hawaii. Okay. Oh, what day am I going? Okay, thank you. And then like, oh yeah, they have the plane tickets at the, you know, I'm maybe oversimplifying it, but yeah. Maybe we should bring travel agencies back when we can travel again.
I think so. I mean, I think AAA now does more roadside assistance, but I remember going there when I was little, like before we would go on a trip. I think we drove to North Carolina once and we went in there and, you know, they would help you. You would sit there for like an hour. They would help you tell. They would give you this like spiral bound notebook of just like step-by-step directions to get there the whole time.
It seems like everything could have been avoided in this film if they just went to a travel agency.
Exactly. But he wanted to rough it out in the outback.
So once again, like, they're having an awful time. They pass an abattoir, which is apparently a slaughterhouse.
I didn't realize that. Oh.
Yeah, and you'll notice at the very end of the film, we see the driver, his truck has, like, cows in it, I think.
It's the same guy that they see. So he stops and has a drink while his wife's sleeping and gets, like, a case of beer. And then his wife kind of wakes up after they get petrol as well, and she makes eye contact with this guy who's actually the slaughterhouse driver at the end of
I
the
see
movie.
I didn't realize. I just another note on the saving the marriage thing, like, this guy would be so better suited to just listen to what his wife wants for like 5 minutes than trying to force this experience on her.
Yeah, exactly. If your wife doesn't want to go camping, don't force her to go camping to save the marriage, I think is the big takeaway. But
right, or
exactly.
even if he just listened to her concerns for 5 minutes of like, oh, I'm sorry, like, wait, why don't you want to go camping? And she tells him, and he's like, yeah, I understand. Like, well, I don't know. We'll go back or whatever. She's probably like, that saves the marriage right there. And their lives. So then,
foreshadowing.
Yeah. We keep seeing these fun little Australian animals. I think we get some Tasmanian devil in there. I think there's like a wombat. I thought it was a wombat, but I think it's actually a possum.
Yeah. So I looked it up because they kept calling this animal the possum, and
it didn't really look like one though.
It kind of looks like this patamelon mammal okay. they have there. I was Googling around because I was like, that does not look like a United States possum.
When I Googled like Australian possum, I found something called the common brush-tail possum, which looking at images of that, it did look similar to this possum.
All of their mammals are way more adorable than here. I'll say that about the film.
Oh, we do see a koala very early on, which is great too. I don't think they have any run-ins with koalas, but I'm glad they found time for the koala in there, because
I know
that's
they
important.
Threw it in there for good measure.
Yeah. Did you know, like, apparently I learned this about koalas, that I guess that, you know, they're like obsessed with eucalyptus or whatever, but like apparently the eucalyptus is just like gets them really high. And so like when they are like going to town on their eucalyptus, they're like getting like coked up, basically.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it also has virtually no like nutritional value.
Oh, interesting.
Like it's not a nutritious plant from what I know. And so that's kind of also why they sleep all the time, because probably they're high and they don't have enough energy to do anything.
Yeah, it's amazing. They're kind of like, I know like people think they're cute, but I think they're kind of a menace, actually.
And I think too, let me check on this really fast. I think koala babies eat their parents' poop in order to get nutrition to grow up.
Oh, that's lovely.
I think it's that animal.
I mean, eucalyptus oil smells good, so I'll give it that. But I guess it's maybe true. Not the best for eating. So, but yeah. So they get to the beach, and they actually don't get to the beach until later the next day. They just kind of sleep in the car at night because they can't find the beach. They keep going around the same tree, in this same like loop.
He finally listens to his wife, who's like, we can't see anything. It's pouring down rain. It's dark. Let's just stop and sleep.
Well, he kind of listens to her. He kind of listens to her. She's like, let's go back to a hotel. And he's like, no, we'll sleep in the car right here. So he kind of compromises a little bit. they wake up the next morning. It's bright and sunny. And she's like, where's the beach? And he's like, why do we need the beach? It's beautiful outside. The sun is shining, whatever. But then they do go and find the beach. It's nearby. And I love this shot of them running to the beach with their dog. I was just like, yeah, that's like relationship goals right there. Aside from everything else, just like being free out in the nature, running to a nice sandy dune with your dog.
Exactly. That was kind of, they were finally happy for a brief moment in the movie where, you know, there was a beach and it was a beautiful day. And
so the first thing on the agenda is she's like, what are we going to eat for dinner tonight? And I guess they've brought frozen chicken and chuck, which I think is like a steak, right? Or like I don't know what the chuck is.
Like beef or something?
Yeah.
I think it's a like ground chuck, I think is beef. So some type of animal.
She's like, I'm gonna defrost the chicken. And then he's like, what, we could also have fish. I'm gonna go hunt for fish. And she's like, okay, good luck, what, like whatever. Just with his fucking shotgun, like, or his rifle, whatever.
Well, no,
it is.
He takes
it.
Yeah, and he was also during breakfast, he brought a spear gun. So he brought all of these weapons, like a shotgun, a spear gun, and he was kind of messing with the spear gun during breakfast for later. And as he like goes and tries to find food for later,
yeah,
he puts the spear gun down and apparently puts it on lock, and as he's walking away, the spear gun goes off and kind of goes and like lodges itself into a tree.
Yeah, like right in front of his wife.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, I swore I put the safety on. And she's kind of like already getting the heebie-jeebies,
right,
about the whole situation even more so. And so this spear gun just goes into this poor tree. And so he goes off. And then while she was cleaning up food too, we see her ask, you know, where's the insecticide? And she goes and she sprays all of the insects that are at their table.
Yeah, she goes to town with the insecticide.
And the common theme of this movie too is, I think they're trying to get a lot of like the spook or psychological thriller from all of the sounds.
Mm.
So this was a very heavily, like, I don't know the correct word, but there were a lot of sounds, I think, that they were trying to make the movie.
Yeah. Just like really focused in sound design on certain things that were happening, sort of.
Yeah, so when she's like, I remember when she's spraying the ants, kind of screaming, like this really weird, yeah, like, sound in the background.
Yeah, yeah, yes, that was odd. I wasn't entirely sure what was happening. I didn't even realize that was maybe supposed to be the ant screaming. Yeah, another thing about the spear gun, too, is like when that happened, I was like, wait, did he do that on purpose? Because earlier on in the movie, when he first gets home, he has his gun, and like she's up on the balcony folding clothes, and he kind of puts her like in his crosshairs in the gun, and is just like following her, like just for shits and giggles, I guess. But I was like, okay, like, is this dude like keen on killing his wife? Because this is like, is that the direction we're heading in for this? But they also, like, because I had watched the trailer for this, and of course that shot is used to like indicate that there's also like people out there hunting them or whatever. So I was kind of like confused because they didn't show him messing around with a gun before that happened, which is probably on purpose to just add suspense or add like a surprise. But yeah, it kind of came out of nowhere. He goes out to fish with his gun, real classy, just like shooting bullets into the water.
Yeah, he like goes on his little walkabout and is kind of just like exploring with his dog and his gun and his beer bottles. And he kind of just like wandering around the beach, shooting into the air, shooting into the water, shooting into groups of birds, which you also hear kind of screaming in the background when he shoots into them.
He ends up shooting some other animal, and they're not sure what it is, but because she's like, there's a shark in the water, and she's like running and like telling him to get out of the water or whatever. He ends up shooting it. It's not till later what they see what it is. He calls it a bunyip, which is apparently the name of a cryptoid, like a Bigfoot type thing. It's like the stuff of legends. But
it kind of looks like a manatee almost in the movie.
Yeah, it's the actual animal is called a dugong, which is like a sea cow. It's basically sort of like a manatee. And that's another funny thing too, is that we were talking about the low budget of the movie, and I don't know if you noticed, but like the production company name of the movie was like a dugong production, and I was like, oh yeah, this is one of these things where it's like they just like formed a production company just for this movie, basically.
Did you know it was the producer in the what is it? How do you say
dugong?
It? Dugong suit. Like, there's a person in that.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. That's so funny.
Yeah.
That definitely makes sense because, like, obviously they have this thing. It's, like, beached. It's up on the water. And it's, like, it's kind of moving around, but, like, obviously I'm sure. Well, because some of this is like animals, whether it's like an animal trainer with a possum or like the dog or whatever it might be, any of the animals in the movie. But obviously, I don't think that like dugong trainer is probably a very like common profession. So, yeah, that makes sense. And they have it like it's beached up on the water. And and he also, like I mentioned, the possum, he like. His wife's asleep and he's just like messing with the possum. He tries to feed it a grape for some reason because he's a goddamn idiot.
Because
he doesn't even
nature.
Like toss it to it.
Yeah, he's like mocking it. I think he has like grapes and he's like, oh, you want this? Like, come and get it.
Yeah, and then it bites the shit out of his hand. So then I think the next morning they decide like they are going to leave, right? They're like, okay, fine, like we're gonna leave. He acquiesces.
The wife keeps hearing kind of like this baby crying which they attributed to him shooting the mother in the water. The whatever the sea cow was, like the baby was still there.
Yeah.
And there's just like this kind of visceral crying in the background of a lot of the scenes. And anytime like the wife is uncomfortable and doesn't want to be there, they kind of just ramp up that crying sound in the background. And finally he's like, okay, fine. Like, I got bit by a possum. This is a little spooky. We should go.
And there's also like, he spots another car.
Mm-hmm.
On the beach, which I was confused what was happening there, like because he seemed really concerned about it, and I was like, do they know who these people are?
That whole plot line made zero sense. That was like,
yeah,
a 25 minute segue in the movie of just, yeah, when they finally decide to leave, he's kind of a dick again and won't listen to his wife, and he's like, you know, before we pack up camp, like, we should drive down to where the other car was.
And I thought that, like, for some reason, I thought that's where the other couple was. And they were, like, supposed to meet them. But I think that was totally wrong. and we, like, the resolution on that plot line doesn't really make any sense either. Because later on, he swims, or she, is it him or her? One of them swims into the water, and the car's in the water, and there's, like, a woman drowned inside the car.
Yeah, it looked like a kid. Like, he kind of went into, she kind of stays in the car, of course, because she's like, I don't want to be here. This is stupid. I hate you. They had already gotten in a screaming match where we find out that she had an abortion, and he accuses her of the neighbor being the dad and not him. And so during this whole screaming match, they kind of agree that on Tuesday they'll get a divorce. So, of course, the camping trip did not save it. So he kind of runs out of the car and he sees a tent. And he opens it up and there's like this vicious dog in there that, of course, he starts taunting again.
Yeah. There's also a really creepy like little tea set with like a table with like dolls having tea or whatever.
Yeah. I think the producers were like, we need to throw something in a little bit spooky.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is that it was spooky and the car, everything with the car was spooky. Like, I liked that stuff, but it all didn't add up. And I feel like if they would have like, I feel like they didn't construct enough of a plot around some of these like visual ideas that were pretty cool. Like, I think that there should have been more of a connection and or more of an understanding what was happening with the other people. There's a lot of wasted time in this movie too, where it was them wandering from place to place and nothing really happened. And I do think that like you could have saved some time by like going to the next moment where an animal attacks or whatever. Like, it wasn't building up suspense for me. It was just kind of like, okay, when am I going to learn what's actually happening next or whatever?
Yeah, I totally agree. Kind of a large majority of the movie was him just wandering around on the beach with all his weapons and like being a douchebag. Like, whether him be like shooting random animals that don't need to be shot, or him just throwing his beer bottles, or him just kind of coming back and being a dick to his wife.
He's off with the dog somewhere, and he just like is unloading around into like just a little flock of like possums or something, right? Like, I don't think they show what animal it is, but he's kind of like, you're kind of like from the POV of where the animals are, and he's just like blasting shots in your direction, and you just hear all these animal cries, and it's like, Jesus Christ.
He's trying to get, or he's starting to get spooked about the animals just being dicks to him too. Because like at one point there was an eagle that swarms down at his head and tries to attack him.
Yeah.
And then
that's because they have an eagle egg.
Yeah, it's true. Like, his wife gets really pissed too during their fight, and she had gathered this eagle egg when she had taken a walk earlier, throws it at a tree, and there's just like blood running down the tree. And so then they assume the eagle's pissed and swarms down and attacks him.
You know, some of those moments are interesting. I just think there's like a lot of wasted time in between them that could have been used to like further flesh out like what was happening with this other couple. Like, whether that was more of a suspenseful thing, like we should be afraid of these other people there, or if it's more of a if it's more of like, we also see this other couple and what they're dealing with, or like maybe they're in the middle of like when they meet up with them, like they're further down the road of this like animal terror, or like they're like fully hiding out in the car and they're like, we can't go back in the woods because of what happened or something, like kind of ramping shit up in a way.
Yeah, I think like the only great suspenseful part of this movie was probably like the last half hour of just where, of course, they go and look at this other car, and then the car is like submerged in water, so he swims in and sees a dead person in there. And so he runs back to her and he's like, we have to go to authorities. And she's like, screw your authorities, like, I'm going home. And
yeah, I love that.
they drive back to the campsite to like get everything, and when he gets out of the car, she just takes off. She's like, screw you. Yeah. You haven't listened to me the whole time. I'm leaving.
And also, like, once again, with the drowned person, like, just to get back to that really quick, like, I still don't understand. Like, I'm not led to believe, like, I have any indication of what happened with the other people. Like, why would the car end up in the water? Were they, like, you know what I mean? The car was on the beach before. Like, did someone, like, commit suicide? Like, why did this happen? What animal, like, force them into the water? I still don't fully,
literally no answers.
Yeah,
there's no there's just like an empty tent with a vicious dog, and then this van that suddenly is in the water that was once on the beach.
Also, I will say that, like, apart from his obviously just like bringing his gun and shooting tons of animals, like, they weren't doing anything that atrocious. Like, it almost felt like I was expecting that they were gonna really like go hog wild on nature and like just like burn shit down and do whatever they want, which like they kind of do, but I didn't feel like it necessarily like deserved them the retribution that they get. But like, you know, just to point out, like, I think it's fine to go camping if you're respectful. I think it's a good thing to do. I don't think like them going to this beach in theory with their car, like whatever, right? Like there, that was no great sin on its own. So
back in the 70s, I know there was a lot going on with, you know, a lot of littering, a lot of like smoking, there was a lot of stuff with aerosols at that point, a lot of stuff with pesticides, like kind of what's indicated too with, I mean, I was researching because I was like, the eagle was an interesting choice in the eagle egg. And I was like, oh yeah, during that time, there was the whole DDT crisis in the U.S. of just these eagles eating fish that have been swimming in, you know, water with runoff, and the eagle eggs were getting really thin. And that's where we saw the eagles go onto the endangered species list. I don't know. I didn't know.
Right. And that was for America. Like, I don't know if Australia, if they were endangered there too.
I know. Yeah. So I think, I don't know. I don't know if the whole point of the movie was small actions may have really big consequences.
Well, I think that like, I do think that it was the 70s and some of these concepts of like taking care of the environment, or modern environmentalist activism, like in its current form, like it was probably a newer thing sort of. Mm-hmm. So I do think there's some of that, right? Where like basically just introducing these ideas of like taking care of the earth to people. But then again, like it doesn't seem to me like these filmmakers like were on a mission necessarily to like their first priority wasn't like, we need to make like a polemic about the environment. It was like, we're gonna use this as our backdrop for like a kind of like schlocky B thriller movie, you know.
It was just like the producers and writers were like, we have a lot of zookeeper friends, like let's somehow take advantage of this and get random animals in here and just start like attacking the people on screen.
That's a good point. Is that true? Were the animals like they?
I know, I read that the possum had to be so heavily sedated in order to do that scene. I just, like, they had a bunch of just random animal facts like that.
That's the thing, too, is, like, you wonder if this movie in the 70s, or like, the animals that were used, like, were they being hypocritical in a way? Like, were they taking real animals and treating them poorly? You know what I mean? Like, that Apocalypse Now, which is a famous movie that came out, I think right around this time in 1979, the famous scene at the end of this movie where the Vietnamese savages in the jungle or whatever with Colonel Kurtz, with Marlon Brando's character, like it's like it's kind of the climactic scene, and there's like this whole like ritual thing happening, and they take like a big like axe to a water ox, I believe, or something like that. And mm-hmm. it's like, you see it a couple times, like in slow motion from different angles as like this Doors music is hitting a crescendo. And like, I think the thing from the behind the scenes of that movie is that that's like a real animal that they just fucking slaughtered. Like
they slaughtered, it's awful, right? Screen. But like, yeah, that's insane.
Some of those laws didn't really exist quite the same, you know? And like, obviously that used to happen in movies. People used to kill animals. And I was kind of, there were a couple moments in this movie, like, I think we see that same crab on the beach and it's like,
it gets run over
and it gets run over. And I'm like, did they actually just run over that crab? Like, it was like hard to tell if they did some other effect or, you know, like
that. I did read that the kangaroo they hit at the beginning was actually just a dead kangaroo that they transported to set that was already dead.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's kind of sketchy too, though, you know?
I know. Like, how did it die for them to transport it? Like, did they just drive on the side of the road and they're like, oh, a dead kangaroo, this will be perfect for our movie.
Yeah, the last movie I watched with Steve and Robbie, Videodrome, there's a final scene in that movie where the TV explodes and out come all these, like, bloody guts and everything. And I learned that behind this, like the interview with one of the effects people, they actually like were near this like slaughterhouse or whatever, and he was able to purchase all these like sheep guts, and just had like a bag of sheep guts that they ended up using because it was like it looked perfect or whatever. But I was like, that's disgusting. Like apparently it smelled awful. And just does not seem like sanitary because they shoot it right at the camera towards all the people. So they like they showed a photo of people like covered with like barriers in front or whatever. But like it's like an air cannon shooting all these sheep guts out. So, you know, some of those things just like would not fly in making a movie in 2020, you know.
Oh, I know. And I think like these movies have a certain charm to it, and it does seem basic, and there was a lot of messed up stuff, just, you know, them doing special effects like that. And this movie was remade in, what was it, like early 2000s, so I'm kind of curious to watch to see if they like CGI a lot of the messed up animal scenes.
Yeah,
or if it's kind of along the same realm where they're just like murdering all of these animals in real life or tranquilizing them or whatnot.
Yeah, I'm going to guess what I know about that sequel or that remake, that they probably did not have the budget for a lot of a lot of good animal CGI. It's probably even worse because it looks it's somewhere faked in between. So
That's so heartbreaking. I wonder how many animals have died just in the production of movie scenes like this.
I mean, that's kind of like the thing, like no animals were harmed in the making of this film or whatever, that started to get put in movies, and I think it's later turned into kind of a joke, like when like a company's making like a silly video with like their dog or whatever, or like something that's like something that's very clearly like a fake animal or whatever, it's like no animals were harmed, blah blah blah, mm-hmm. whatever, it's like kind of played off as a joke or whatever, but but how we don't know how many animals were harmed in the making of this film. Apparently not the Bunyip, because that was a Bunyip costume.
yes. No sea cows. Yeah. They were probably like endangered or something, like our manatees are. But where were we in the plot line? So,
well, yeah, the plot kind of wraps up by like we don't see her death, but basically we get, I did think this was cool. Like, we get the sense that she's been killed by the eagle because the eagle's overhead and he drops one of the wife's shoes to Peter.
Peter's left there because his wife leaves. And so he, like, goes back to their campsite and, like, makes a fire and all this spooky animal noises in the background. And yeah, she drives off into the distance. And we see all of these, like, birds flying at her windshield. And all of these giant spider webs, and she's in the middle of all these trees, and then her car crashes, or the birds make her crash or something. And we kind of see her run out of the car. Yeah, and then this eagle drops her shoe onto Peter.
But later on, we see her body, and she's been, like, harpooned through the chest. And I just did not understand how that happened.
So I think he finally accepts, like, he's like, oh, shit, like, nature is coming to destroy me. I am out now in the wilderness with no protection other than my harpoon gun. I have nothing left. My wife left me. I'm just going to roll myself in our tent that's on the ground and lay here. And I think he hears like more spooky sounds. So again, because he's an idiot, he just shoots the harpoon gun into nothing except the sounds.
Oh, he shot her.
Yeah, so that's okay. The assumption I had is like he heard more of the just like baby crying, eagle screeching sounds, and he's like, shit, and kind of just like launches the harpoon gun, but it's pitch black. And then the next scene, it's daytime.
Yeah.
And we see him just staring at her dead body with a harpoon arrow in her neck.
I gotta be honest, I had a hard time. I was having a hard time paying attention near the end of this movie. It kind of lost my interest a little bit, but
that's for sure.
That's a much better, that's a much more interesting and poetic death for her. Also, just like R.I.P. Marsha, like what the, like she didn't want to go on this trip in the first place, and then she got killed by her husband.
I know, and then he turns around and like this dead ass sea cow is like right next to him all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And so he lights it on fire and then just like runs off into the wilderness and it's just like running and running and running. And then he like trips and then there's like a snake and then he's running and running and running and like trips. And then there's another snake and then he's finally.
This went on forever.
Yeah, it did. I guess also like the last 20 minutes, there was virtually no dialogue after they got in a screaming match and they're like, fuck you, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
She drives off and then there's just nothing. And then he finally gets to the road.
I think he talks to himself a little bit.
Yeah, it's true. And he talks to Cricket because Cricket's the only one left there for him. And he gets to the road and he sees this slaughterhouse truck coming and he's like, oh, thank God, someone's going to rescue me. And it cuts to the slaughterhouse truck and a bird flies in at the driver. And of course the driver gets distracted and he swerves off the road and runs over Peter.
This was so abrupt. I like the fact that the bird did it, but like it was literally within a second or two of switching to the close-up shot of the driver, the bird flies in the window. So like I felt like I didn't even have a second to breathe and figure out what was happening. It was just like wide shot of the road, truck, Peter waving, close up of the truck driver, bird flies in, he gets run over, like all within like 8 seconds. Like
I know the amount of action in this movie that's actually like messed up or a slight thriller is probably like 2 minutes. And of course that was 10 seconds of it. Yeah. Like not too much. And yeah, of course the driver's like, oh shit. And then he stops and like gets out and looks at Peter and he's like, well, he's dead. And then just drives off. And then that's the end of the movie.
I guess it's like, once again, like you got to think that like, if you have a low budget, if you don't have a lot of money to make a film and you're trying to get noticed and do something interesting, like there's a lot of stuff you can do with the horror genre that like you shouldn't go with animals because like doing something with animals, you're going to need a lot of money to make it convincing and interesting. Like you could literally just shoot somebody like scared in their house. Like, did I hear something? Like that's like the cheapest, easiest thing to do. Like that's why there are a lot of low budget horror movies, but that's why I think like some of the action with the animals near the end like really didn't work because they just really didn't have the like resources to make it happen. But then again, this movie is, you know, in the Criterion 70s horror collection. It seems like it's a bit of a cult classic. It's known. I don't know how well of a reception it has. I was kind of looking it up and there were heavily mixed reviews, which typically for an older movie that has lived on, you'll see nothing but positive reviews. So, so I don't know if it was the greatest film. I did once again enjoy seeing the Australian animals, but like, I think narratively it kind of fell apart about halfway through. I was enjoying the stuff with like I thought it was kind of interesting. Their like failed marriage and whatnot, but it was some of the stuff was lacking a little nuance and it was a little heavy handed in terms of like him being such an asshole to nature and them having like no relationship basically. So
exactly. I thought they were trying like their thriller budget was pretty much just pressing record on all of these animal sounds, which were supposed to scare you the whole time.
Right.
And I thought it was towards the end. It was just annoying. Cause it was this sea cow pup just crying in the background the whole time. And I'm like, can this movie just end? Like, I understand what they're trying to do, but the thriller effect of this noise is not working.
right, for sure. So, yeah, so that's Long Weekend. I think, like, one thing I wanted to point out was just some other, like, Australian film stuff. And I think the most notable thing, at least when it comes to the horror genre, is The Babadook, you know?
Yes. I watched that over at your house in college.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay. Yep. So yeah, we love The Babadook. Everyone loves The Babadook. It's a really scary movie.
Yes.
And the director, Jennifer Kent, she actually released another movie last year that I really liked called The Nightingale. It's a really difficult movie to watch. There's like a really, there's some really intense like violence and sexual violence early on in the film. But it's
that's what I've heard. Yeah.
It's really good. It was one of my favorite movies from 2019. And it's actually like it's actually kind of a historical drama too, because it's basically dealing with the history of Australia and this woman who, Australia started with like English colonists, and they would actually, take over slaves from, or, criminals basically from Ireland would be sent there almost as like a prison colony and a labor camp. Yeah. So it's this, this Irish woman, in Australia, and then she basically it's kind of like a revenge type movie after what happens to her, and she teams up with an Aboriginal Australian slave, and they, you know, they kind of each have their own grievances against the English colonial ruling class. So that was a really good movie. I've only seen it the once, and I think it would be really hard to watch again, but yeah, I think in terms of too, there's a lot of scenes of them out in the wild in Australia and just sort of like dealing with the, you know, with nature. So
I'm looking right now kind of at it, and I would be interested to watch it too. I've heard wonderful reviews on it.
It's really good. It's a tough watch. Like I said, it's very intense, but it is really good. But yeah, I mean, I think like with Australian film otherwise, it's like, it's not a ton of notable stuff, but,
I'm looking through a list right now because I was like, I don't even know if I know many notable Australian movies. Like, I don't think they're a powerhouse in that regard.
There's another film from the 70s that's kind of it's more of a spooky movie than I would say a horror or a thriller, but it's called Picnic at Hanging Rock. And this is a movie I've seen a while ago. But it's really cool and creepy, and it kind of involves this, I think it's like this all-girls boarding school, and they go on a field trip, and they're up in the rocks in the mountains, and a couple girls just kind of like disappear, essentially. And it's kind of unresolved, but I think it's a really well-made film, and it also fits into this feel of these like 70s horror films that the Criterion Channel has this collection of right now. So that's a cool one. And then other than that, I think like some of the most notable things are like Mad Max, Baz Luhrmann, Crocodile Dundee. And then, what is it? Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, which is kind of like a drag road trip movie, that takes place in Australia, which I've never seen, but.
And of course, Mary-Kate and Ashley, Our Lips Are Sealed. That was also filmed in Australia. Don't forget that one.
There's also The Rescuers Down Under, which I think probably has no connection to Australia, but it's probably like my, as a child, my understanding of the land down under, all in all. So, oh my gosh. And one last note about Australia. I totally forgot to, to try the Vegemite. Do you have your Vegemite on hand?
I have my Vegemite. So, before we filmed earlier this week, we were talking about scheduling, and Mike made a joke about get your Vegemite. So I decided to order some and send him a squeeze tube for easy travel. So I thought we could try it, because I have never tried it. And it was, if you look at their movie, during the movie on their table, I believe they had a container of it.
I know it's a very popular food in Australia. I don't know if I've tried it before. I've only seen it once. And that's our friend from college, Brent. His sister actually lives in Australia. So they had a jar of Vegemite at their house. But I've never seen it in a tube like this before.
Yeah, so apparently it's got a lot of B vitamins. It's basically just brewer's yeast, right? Have you smelled it yet?
I have not. I think I'm gonna not smell it beforehand. So I ran and grabbed my Vegemite along with some Simple Mills almond flour, rosemary and sea salt crackers. So we're gonna
get my pumpkin cranberry crisps.
So I just have to say, before eating this is an extremely unappetizing looking bottle. It looks like it should be like paint or glue or something. Like, I really feel like they could work on their branding to make this look like a food and not some sort of like spackling paste. But
you know, the classic. So there was, I got you just plain Vegemite. I know they have like Marmite, which I couldn't really figure out what the difference was. I think other than maybe it's flavored. I know a lot of people roasted Tom Hanks this year because after he got COVID and recovered from it, he was in Australia and he posted this picture of a piece of toast that was just covered in Vegemite. And everyone was like, that's disgusting. You put maybe like a dollop of it on something.
Did I put too much?
I kind of smeared mine out.
I feel like I maybe put a little bit too much. I'm gonna hang on. I'm gonna spread
it
this.
It smells so
crappy.
Bad.
I don't understand. I haven't even tasted it yet, and I'm already prepared for the worst. Look at us just trashing a beloved Australian institution here.
Hopefully, we don't have any Australian listeners because they're gonna stop listening after this episode.
Okay. Are you ready? We're gonna eat it.
Yeah. Right. 1, 2, 3.
It's very salty.
Yeah, it's very salty.
It kind of, I kind of taste the yeast. Like, it tastes like if you turned like a gross like IPA into a food or something like that.
Yeah, you drained all the liquid out, and you're like, let's put this in a tube of glue, and market it, for sure. So, I'm going to try a little bit on its own.
Oh, have fun with that. What is the appeal of this, I have to ask?
It's just straight salt. It's just, honestly, all it tastes like to me, plain, is salt.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it's got some protein. It's got some thiamine, which is B1, riboflavin, B2. Niacin, which is B3, and folate, which is B9. So is it basically just a B vitamin that they eat there?
Yeah, yeah.
I could maybe see it being really good with, like, meat or cheese or something as, like, a salty element.
I don't know. I think they gotta tweak the recipe a little bit.
Isn't this, like, historic?
It is historic.
I feel like there's so many movie or famous things where they're eating Vegemite and they're just so grossed out by it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's well known for being gross.
To help with brain function, nervous system, energy release, and fighting fatigue.
I mean, that all sounds good to me. I just don't know if I could stomach it. What's a serving size?
Well, now
5 grams. All right. Well, next time I talk to Mimi, she's going to be like, yeah, I've like introduced Vegemite like into my diet. It's like a staple. I have it all the time. My brain is
You know how people do like apple cider shots in the morning, which I find repulsive good health. I feel like I could incorporate that with a Vegemite shot. Honestly, Sam might like this because it's so salty.
It's very salty. Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, we stuck our toes into some Australian culture, both with the movie and with some culinary choices here.
Would you recommend it to a friend, the movie or the Vegemite?
Probably no to both. I don't know. Would you recommend this movie to a friend?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if they want to like play it on mute and just like have some cute animals, maybe.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, like Jaws and the birds did this better, basically.
Yeah, I agree. They like tried to have a Jaws scene, they tried to have a bird scene and like make it spooky, and it just fell flat.
Yeah, the only thing, you know, the only thing I'll say is it's pretty short, so that's nice. It's like an hour and a half, and it's also fun, just the Australian culture stuff, you know. But I'm sure there's other movies that you can get a taste of Australian culture and see some kangaroos. So,
well, all I have to say, the takeaway is like, don't be a dick to nature like this, because, you know, eventually we'll be eradicated, whether it's by getting hit by cars because of ducks,
right,
or getting spear gunned in the throat,
or,
you know, just generally setting the whole world on fire.
Yeah, or we'll decimate an animal, a species, and sort of ripple effect the food chain, and then help ensure the downfall of our own species. So, you know, there's a short game and a long game here, and we gotta respect nature and we gotta respect animals. So
I know, yeah, like the movie was pretty kitschy, but I think the overall view of just like it, I think it's helpful that we saw the repulsion and like what he was doing and littering and all that other stuff. And I think if you watch the movie and don't see anything wrong, then there's something wrong with it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think one other like modern movie that comes to mind that is pretty different, but I think when it comes to like talking about animals and the environment and everything is Okja. I don't know if you've seen Okja, but it's from Bong Joon-ho, who just won best director and best picture for Parasite.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and this was I think his last movie before that, and it's on it was a Netflix co-production, or it's on Netflix, but it's sort of this world of these genetic super pigs and this idea of like that this corporation is really like good for the environment or whatever, but you know, in reality it's very dark and evil sort of. So
well, we're literally seeing super pigs right now, like wild hogs, like yeah. The joke of just like 30 feral hogs, but like these wild hogs are also breeding with hogs that we eat, and they're becoming like these massive, angry, invasive superpower hogs that people are like flying. I think you can get like a flight trip in Texas to like go up and just like shoot them from the sky, which is like right, messed up. So, but also like
there's so many that the government like needs people to hunt them basically, like
exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of just like we're trying to modify all this stuff for our food chain. Then it's literally nature is fighting us back right now for that stuff.
You should watch Okja. I think you'd like it. It's okay. Good. Yeah.
I have a lot of movies to watch now.
I know. This is what happens when this pod, when somebody does the pod, we just talk about a lot of movies and we just kind of develop a bit of a to-do list. So
I'm also watching I'm also been watching Twin Peaks the past month, which has also been like in the spooky realm. It's not a movie, but have you seen Twin Peaks?
I've seen I watched the first season a long time ago and a couple episodes of the second season, and I loved it. And I think this was like early days of Netflix. I remember watching it with some of my like high school friends, and yeah, the characters are amazing. The weird quality of everyone. I mean, I love David Lynch, and it's just a really cool show. So, it's definitely spooky. I think there's some very spooky moments in that show. So,
yeah, well, there's now I'm towards the end of the second season. There's a lot of mystical stuff, but there's a big, influence of animals in there too. Like the owls, there's an owl that's kind of like a constant theme throughout the whole thing. And the owls are more than they seem. And
yeah. David Lynch is a master of just like getting some really scary shots out of otherwise like everyday and mundane things. Like I can't remember if it's Twin Peaks or Blue Velvet, the movie, but one of those, it just kind of lingers on the stoplight for a while and it's like so creepy. So
yeah, he does a lot of that. And a lot of it seems like a dream too. So it's kind of got like this sci-fi thriller confusion spookiness to it.
Yeah for sure. But cool, all right, well thanks again for picking this movie and for joining the pod, and
thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Hope you have a wonderful Halloween and keep watching some spooky stuff.
Oh, I will.